the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
This is the podcast for broadcast. Sound off podcast. With Matt Kendall.
This week I'm speaking with Danny Kingsbury, National Format Director for Rock Radio at Rogers. I called him to verify the accuracy of his LinkedIn page, where he lists himself as proficient in on-air, programming, promotion, regulatory, administration, sales, and operations, as well as creative and strategic thinker and overall problem solver. Having already pre-recorded the conversation, I can tell you that this is accurate. Especially the regulatory side, where we're going to go as far back as the 1980s and discuss the era of foreground and mosaic programming. Don't worry, we're also going to talk about real life too. Danny Kingsbury joins me from Rogers Radio headquarters in Ottawa, home to 1310 News, Shea 106 and KISS 105.3. Is rock radio thriving, dying, or just shifting?
I think it's shifting. It's had better days in terms of having a cultural and social impact, you know, on society. And what I mean by that is, you know, the 60s and the 70s certainly were the two decades where rock music was created out of, you know, out of revolution, really, to coin a phrase. But, you know, times were turbulent. You know, the never trust anyone over 30 generation, you know, who were going through war in Vietnam and all of the issues that were happening. That's how rock was created, in my opinion. I think it was. It spoke to a generation, and it meant something to that generation. The lyrics were something that had an impact, and the music was new and exciting. It was sort of what's the next step from, you know, Bill Haley and the Comets and Elvis, and then all of a sudden now we're getting into much more electric guitars, and then of course drugs made an impact on it, certainly. So it certainly has had better days, but I still think it's a really great format, and there still are a few artists, you know, even today. I mean, it's splintered so much, right? With new music, and I think the audience has changed. The format hasn't really changed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it sort of dovetails into what I had asked Steve Jones at one point about music. It's not very political. We don't have Crosby, Stills, and Nash recording Ohio. We don't get Rage Against the Machine with songs of protest. Are we really dealing with a more apolitical landscape out there?
No, I think all of those questions that society has, no matter what your age, are being asked and answered and editorialized on the internet. You know, versus going to a record store on Saturday afternoon because you have found out that there is a new album out and you want to hear exactly what, you know, this artist has created and is saying in their songs.
You've built so many radio properties over the years. And so what's it take to build a successful rock radio station today? What are the first few building blocks?
Well, I would say you certainly need people who understand the music and have an appreciation for its history. It's great now because for so long I work with mostly people who say that their dad listened to rock growing up, which I think is amazing. And I ask, you know, questions about, well, like, so does that mean it's old and square? Or, and I'll never forget the day when I had about 6 or 7, you know, 13 or 14 year olds going through my record collection, and they pull out the Eagles and say, the Eagles, they were the best band ever. And I was just shocked. I mean, you know, this goes back to the, you know, to the late 90s, but, you know, good music is good music. So I think you have to make sure that you have people who appreciate the format. And then I think you have to have people who like music. I mean, no disrespect, but there are a lot of announcers who play the music and don't necessarily love it. They can do a great job of what they're supposed to do, is be excited about the music. Because if you're not excited about, I don't care if it's Taylor Swift or, you know, Led Zeppelin, if you're not excited about playing that song, then, well, why are you in that format, and why are you, you know, why are you doing what you do? So I think you have to like music. But in rock, I think you really have to like it, and you have to appreciate it. And you have to understand that it's a little bit of a different audience.
One of the great accomplishments of 2017 for you was Gord FM, and that was changing the brand for 4 days of rock radio stations in your chain across the country. How difficult was it to do it on a national level, to rebrand everything Gord FM?
Well, this is where technology is our friend and communication is our friend. I think we're set up really well with branding across the country in the format. And it wasn't that difficult, because it was one of those scenarios where we had planned ahead of time, unfortunately, after we'd heard the news about Gord, you know, a year or earlier, that we knew it was inevitable. So what are we going to do about it? You know, what do we owe to the audience? You know, what do we owe to the band? How are we going to recognize this? And then, of course, as it got closer, when the final tour went out, and we just saw how special that was, and how uniting it was, and how emotional it was, and how engaging it was, and how, you know, people were, you know, had tears in their eyes, and that was special. And if you didn't recognize that was special, then, you know, you were in our business, then you probably should get out. I mean, that was a very special time. And if you, it was knocking us over the head, right, with a big bat, that, you know, you have to do something here. So I think from a doing the right thing perspective, it was pretty easy. And then, you know, we've got some really great people who work, you know, in our business and in our company and in our brand. And I just love that when you inspire the troops and they all go out and say, what if we did this? And what if we did that? And what if we did this? And, you know, we were literally choosing, you know, things that we couldn't do, which, you know, that if you've got 10 things and you can only do five, you know, you're in a good situation, versus, you know, we need to do five things and we have one. So, you know, are we going to fake the other four? Or so everything just seemed to come together really, really well with that. And then, I will tell you, emotionally, I was engaged in that project. You know, full disclosure, I was emotionally engaged in that project. And, you know, there was that band meant a lot to me. And as a fan, I mean, I didn't hang out with them, and I didn't understand their families. I didn't, you know, I wasn't really super close to that band, but I was sure a fan. And they meant something to me in my life, and they were part of my radio career. They were a good soundtrack, you know, and I did have, you know, some great memories with that band. So it was really a labor of love for me personally. And I know that certainly everybody else in the, you know, when we did that, boy, you know, Monday morning, it was like, was that the right thing to do? And everyone just collectively said, yes. I mean, that was amazing. And don't we all feel great? Don't we all feel spent? Don't we all feel drained? And you know you've done something good if you're quite tired and quite emotionally spent after. So, and I think that was the case with Gord FM.
Yeah, so you're building up this big project and then you're holding it in. So you're carrying around a little bit of weight as, you know, you're moving towards this day, which you don't know is coming, but then all of a sudden does come. And you're thinking to yourself, is this the right thing to do? So there's a little bit of a psychological weight you have to carry with that.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd be less than honest if I told you that at 9:30 that morning Eastern time, I did a Skype call like we're doing today with, you know, nine other people in our brand. And I was in the boardroom and said, here's where I think we should go. And everyone certainly agreed that we should go there. We had some great discussion about how long we should go. You know, should we go till Sunday at midnight? I left that open for some stations who felt that that might be too much, but everyone universally agreed that that's where we should go. So the truth was, we actually made that decision to extend it as long as we did, you know, quite quickly after we got the news. So even though we had great plans and we had great imaging and we had great stories, and Mel Dahl and Sideshow and Kingston put together a great collaboration of some, what we would call back in the day, I'm sure you'll remember, of, you know, mosaic programming and foreground programming, where we did, you know, some in-depth, you know, music and backgrounding and enriched spoken word, it was called, but it was really, you know, the right thing to do. So we had all that in the can, and now it was just, how do we feel? How's everybody feeling? And I was feeling quite sad that morning, I'll be honest. And I really felt like, you know, what, you know, okay, so let's do this. And then I got really, really inspired. And I just felt, energized for the next, you know, several days.
Wow. You said some words there that I'll have to explain, but foreground and mosaic. I mean, I think that died out in 1991. I actually had it down to talk to you about this because I know that when you were working at 92 City FM, you would go and record live shows and then run them back on the radio. And then that would count as 2 hours of foreground programming towards your promise of performance for the week.
That is correct. That was a very complicated time in radio. There was good reason for it. And I'm not more of an analytic than a creative programming guy, but I am an analytic, and I do like it when numbers all work. And I've always taken great pride in you know, being in compliance, if you will, because first of all, it's good for job security. And it's very embarrassing if any company that has the resources, you know, isn't in compliance. So that's something that we really, you know, back then, and it was quite difficult. You know, if you remember, we had to, and I will speak about that concert bit of foreground. Back then, our logger tapes, you know, ran at, you know, like an inch a second. You know, we had them on tape and they were 24-hour reels and the quality was terrible. And, you know, we didn't have computer printouts like on Music Master because Music Master wasn't invented. And there were all these things that we still did manually. Every second of every broadcast day from 6 a.m. till midnight has a content category. Still does today, but it's less relevant in terms of reporting. So FM had tremendous amount of regulation on it, and that was to protect AM. AM was the king. You know, it was the one with all the listeners and it could play all the hits and did. And FM was, you know, would be an unfair advantage to the AM stations from a technological perspective because it sounded better. So it was really regulated in Canada to provide a higher bar, if I can say that. It definitely was supposed to be more thought-provoking programming versus here is that was, you know, Jane's on the phone and she's going to win some tickets by screaming. You know, I mean, there was, you know, I love that kind of radio, by the way, but FM was really designed to enrich the audience, you know, to provide news content, to provide spoken word content, to provide distinct selections. So most of the FM stations in Canada had at least 750 distinct selections per week. And that means that you couldn't, you had to play 750 distinct songs. And I'll tell you now, a CHR station would have 125 distincts on about, you know, 1,500 or 1,600 plays a week, maybe more, depending on how much spoken word they use, right? So think of the difference. So, and then we had the hit non-hit regulation that we couldn't play more than 50% hits. And a hit is anything that made it on the Billboard charts, top 40. We had 50% of our programming had to be enriched. So 20% of it had to be foreground programming, which was, I'm with Matt Kundel today, and he is the lead guitarist of Matt Kundel and the Raiders, and they have just released a new album, and Matt, welcome to the show, and you do an enriched conversation with you, some backgrounding, almost like album notes. You tell me about the band, and then we're going to play one of your songs. Now, in fairness, there was a lot of opportunity to fulfill your commitment to enrichment, but those are some of the easy ones. One of the ones that that the commission and the regulator came up with in collaboration with the CAB was live Canadian programming. If it was a Canadian band recorded live for the purpose of broadcast, then it would count as foreground. But you wouldn't get any enrichment in there, right? You would just get the music, and that's so. If you had to do, maybe the analytics coming out in me now. So let's say each station had to do 2 hours of enrichment a week, which was low. None of it would appear in that live show. So suffice to say, it was very complicated. I remember it well because for some reason I was a bit of a regulatory go-to guy in terms of the regs, and I learned from some of the best people in radio about how to comply, and I had some of the best lessons about being out of compliance in radio. So some that I still laugh at with certain people in the business, one of them being Chuck McCoy. He and I have we've got a joke that goes back, and it's an inside joke, but every single time I see him, he says, "Hey, Danny, you don't effing comply." And we both know exactly where we were when I first heard that story. So, yeah, I like it now better, but I certainly, I have argued in front of people who've given me funny looks that I think the radio was higher quality back then because we needed more people who were well-read. And by the way, not a shot on any current talent. It's just a completely different time. You needed to be well-read. You know, we needed news people. We needed reporters. We needed people who could do that interview with Matt Kundle and the Raiders. But even putting that in perspective, we needed somebody who, if perchance Jimmy Page came into the radio station, we needed somebody who knew about Led Zeppelin, right? So you had to have good people in the radio station who could contribute, and we needed musicologists. And our music directors back in the day were librarians as well. They had to keep the music, organized properly. So it was just a completely different time. It was fun, and I'm glad I know it, and I'm glad I can speak to the history of it. But it's certainly a lot simpler now, and I can tell you that if we had to follow those regulations today, it would be a much different medium.
I grew up in Ottawa, and I caught the tail end of that era, and I worked in radio stations that were out of compliance often. And if you did an interview with Matt Kundle and the Raiders and you gave a weather forecast in the middle, the entire piece was disqualified and didn't count as foreground programming. There was a lot going on. I know, because I gave the weather once and I got yelled at.
And what you did is you interrupted it with surveillance.
Right.
So you could still do the, there's a lot of little misnomers, if you will, is that that segment, so the regulator would say that segment was, good for you for doing that segment with Matt Kundle and the Raiders, and good for you for doing the backgrounding. Good job. It just doesn't qualify as a foreground quarter hour because you interrupted it with surveillance. Yeah, people think, oh, well, no, it didn't count. Well, the programming was still good. So you just had to understand what qualified and what didn't. And imagine, there were so many more people involved in it. So you're right. There was a time when it was very, I think it was, it wasn't often when every station that was called for what was called a CRTC wrap back in the day was in 100% compliance, because it was difficult. It was a challenge to do that.
I grew up listening to Shea 106 and they had the open quarter. And I thought, what's an open quarter? And I said, oh, it's 15 minutes. And then it's 15 minutes of the same thing. And I go, hey, you know what? That's pretty neat. Three songs of protest.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Well, I tell you, the definition was a quarter hour of programming that contains enriched spoken word, and usually it was about 2 minutes, and had a theme. That was the definition of a quarter hour of foreground programming.
Now, it's another 40 minutes of Toronto's best rock on Q107.
So the 90s come rolling in, and we get rid of all that stuff, and you find yourself, you're working at Q107. What was it like doing rock radio Q107 in the 90s?
It was a transition time, and I think back, I've been thinking for the last couple of days about speaking with you and wondering, where you're going to go and what questions you're going to ask me. And I thought, yeah, I'm sure that will come up. And I did think a little bit about the one thing I've done a lot in my career. I've gone into situations where there's a bit of turbulence. It wasn't like, I've gone into these powerhouses that were just at the peak of their performance and their time, and have had to kind of carry on, my wayward son. So I've gone into a lot of places where, they were in transition. And Q was one of those, and it was the best of times. It wasn't the worst of times by any stretch. And I now, at my state where I'm at in life and my career, that I had no worst of times. I think everything was a great opportunity to learn and make mistakes and no one died and be the better for it today. But yeah, Q was interesting because it was a powerhouse and is still is a powerhouse. I don't care what anybody says. If you're an FM station in Toronto, life's pretty good. I mean, you've got to really do poorly to from a programming perspective and from a branding perspective to not do well, right? So good times, some good challenges, but this was a time when I was also sort of riding on the Y95 wave, which, again, I was just so lucky to be part of that, where we had this big station in Hamilton, and those of you in Southern Ontario will know the Highway 6 and Clapperton's Corners. And when you're at the top of Clapperton's Corners driving south, you look across and you see the escarpment on the other side of Lake Ontario, and you see the CHCH TV tower and the what was then CKDS FM antenna was halfway up that tower. And this signal is just unbelievable. 95.3 FM. We had this big signal. It was an AC station. So what did I say about transition? Went into an AC station, you know, beautiful music station to a certain degree. We had like, you know, orchestral music at night for 25 years before we changed that station. So we hit a home run with Y95. There's no question about that. And the group of people that we had at that station, amazing. And we were all, you know, full of, you know what, vinegar, and we just felt, wow, there is no rock station in Hamilton. I wonder how genius it would be to launch a rock station in Hamilton and have it be successful. So it was, and we did well. And it was never about, oh, how are we going to take down Q107? We were in the same company, for goodness sakes, right? So it wasn't like, you know, our competitor was Q. In fact, it was trying to, which may be wishful thinking, but I still like the terminology of repatriating local audience with radio. And I think you will repatriate local audience if you give local audiences something to listen to. So we launched it. It was local, but back in the day, no automation then. So we had jocks on all the time. But the signal was so big that it became this huge full coverage station. We had listeners in Oshawa. You know, we were the number one station in Kitchener for a certain period of time. It wasn't for a long period, but that was complete surprise. We have, you know, Lulu's nightclub in Kitchener. Hey, you guys want to come up and do a live to air? And we still had to, you know, do some regulatory programming back then. But yeah, so that, you know, we were just doing great. And then Q was going through a period of transition. I guess you get, you know, you either get punished or rewarded for having some success in our business. And to me, it was a, you know, a reward to go to Q and take over. And I was working with the GM back then, Don Luzzi, who was, you know, just a tremendous guy, and, you know, to me. And we had a great time. We worked together really, really well. And Wick was a great company. And so we went in and, you know, times were turbulent, but it was fun. And that was a time when, you know, we brought Scruff in to do mornings because Jake went to Winnipeg. So literally that month that I was there, you know, I think it was December of 91 or December of 92. You know, Jake went to Winnipeg to work for the Wick station there. And so the morning show was open. John Derringer was doing Drive, but he had a big offer to go to Montreal. And, you know, we're sitting there, so we have no Drive show and we have no morning show. So I remember Joey Vendetta went into Drive and we brought Scruff in to do mornings. And you know what? Like it was a pretty quick turnaround, and we had, you know, we had some fun. Again, talk about, you know, the higher you get in each market, the larger you get in each market, obviously the people factor increases. You know, there was almost at every position in big markets. You just find that position for position, people are more experienced, more talented. That's, you know, maybe that's just, you know, human nature or, you know, natural evolution. But so a lot of great people at Q and great production people. Some people are still there. I think, you know, Gary Whidden is still there. And I mean, I hate going through the list of names because I can think of many of them, but I'll miss somebody important and they'll say, how come you didn't mention me on that podcast? But we had a great group there. And then AM 640 was the other station there. And, you know, that had gone through a lot. And, you know, so it was a time of, wow, there's no status quo here. Just keep it going. You know, so Q, we changed the morning show and the afternoon show. And then CFTR changed to news. And 640 was the only AM top 40 station on the dial. And I'm going to exaggerate with these numbers, but let's say that CFTR had a 5 and AM 640 had a 1. When CFTR went off the air to become 680 News, they went to a 1 and 640 went to a 5. So, you know, history has proven what the best move was there in terms of those two signals. But, you know, we really lucked into, you know, CFTR going off the air. I mean, and so we did well. But hey, Jesse and Gene came over and Tarzan Dan came over. And so, you know, there was a period there where it was we were really riding high. Things were really, really good. So again, nothing but great memories, but things continue to evolve. Right. And, And the market changed a bit. The regulatory environment changed a bit. So that allowed stations that previously couldn't adjust their formats to adjust their formats a little bit. So, but it was a different time. It was sort of pre-technology. And but it was also post-regulatory, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would pick up the trade every week and Danny Kingsbury's making another change. And I thought, what's this Kingsbury guy doing? He's making changes like every week. But of course, you're in Toronto. There's many stations involved. And the Record is always happy to fill space with whatever Danny Kingsbury is doing. So it almost became like a journal every week. What's Danny up to? And it's funny, you thought I would ask that question because it was really a tumultuous time with the regs coming down. I was at the receiving end of John Derringer because he came to work with us in Montreal. You had all this amazing talent moving around. So it kind of felt like a tornado.
Yeah, I think there were times when it was. And I think from our perspective, we felt that, you know, as a management group there, that we were trying to, you know, and I'm sure we were naive about it, but, you know, like, why couldn't we duplicate the culture in Hamilton in Toronto? You know, everyone in Hamilton's having a great time. And of course, you know, the answer to that is quite easy because, you know, Q was a legendary radio station. And whenever you make any change on any kind of product that is well-branded and has a very loyal audience, I mean, it's tough. And dare I say that people cared more about it back then. I mean, you know, I've worked at radio stations where you walk by reception in the morning and, you know, they're asking you why you're on that record. You know, so everyone's engaged, everyone's involved, everyone's the program director, and that can be a positive because, like, wow, people actually care. You know, it's, you know, there was no such thing as, hey, the station's been off the air for 2 minutes. Has anyone noticed it? Back then, everyone cared about what was coming out of the speaker, and everyone had an opinion about it. So I think you really, you know, the biggest challenge, and I'm not saying it's lessened too much now, is to keep your focus. And try to be able to, where I've gotten better over the years is I've been able to try to engage everybody early in any kind of, you know, decision making, and, you know, seek some feedback from people and understand that you're not going to do anything. It's everybody that you have on your team that's going to make it happen. So if you're a leader and you make all your decisions behind your laptop computer and everyone finds out about it through a memo, then I think you are destined for failure, to put it bluntly. You know, more than ever now, we need great people who are on the same team. We need great culture, and we need people who are, you know, who love what they do and want to get better. I use this back then and I use it now. I use it in my life, my personal life and my professional life, is that I believe that my best days are in front of me. As much as I'm proud and, you know, perhaps look back on things where I might have not done it that way, but I still think my best days are in front of me, and I still enjoy learning. I still enjoy, during the week, I'm talking to Matt Kundle on Skype about radio, and it's great. I'm not treating this like, oh my God, I got to talk to Matt. It's like, well, this is cool. This is unbelievable. And I know that it's going to, when I'm finished this call, I'm going to be like, hey, that was really, I enjoyed that. And now what's next? I just don't want to be one of those guys that just talks about how good it was back in the old days, because it was good, but I often think about times where, I don't know, was it really that good? Like, was it really that good? Like, was the radio fantastic, or do we just remember it that way? And do we often say things like, well, we were legendary back then. Yeah, well, you were legendary back then, and good for you, but, you know, when you're the only station in a market, or you're one of two or three stations in a market, and you were mandated to a certain format, well, yeah, you're going to be successful. Even I could be successful in a one-station market. I guarantee it. And then you can also remember that, you know, radio didn't have competition in the 70s and 80s. Like, we didn't. Like, you know, we didn't have people that were, you know, on the internet. We didn't have streaming services. I mean, I think TV was off the air at 1 a.m, if I'm not mistaken.
That's about right, yeah.
Of course we were successful. I mean, all the radio that I listened to growing up and inspired me, Yeah, it was the only game in town, and that's where I got my music, and that's where I listened to all these great personalities that I still hold in really high regard and awe, you know. Again, I love the old days, and I love what we accomplished as a medium, but I'm just not as down on how some people are with radio in 2018. In fact, I'm pretty bullish. I'm pretty lucky to be in a company that really loves radio and is led by really strong radio people who believe, as I believe, that we're only going to get better. Like, 2019 is going to be a better year for us than 2018.
In just a second, we talk travel, blogging, and head back to the 1980s to talk about letting people go and then getting to work with them again. And being in the business long enough to get the opportunity to hire second-generation morning talent.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
The Sound Off podcast is powered by Core Image Studio, your brand sound. Get it in the now. CoreImageStudio.com.
You know what? I actually thought that Rena Turnbull, you guys are doing an amazing show by yourselves. But then they bring on TJ. And TJ, I can't believe it, but you actually made the show even better. So good on you, buddy. All right. That's all I want to say. Love you, Turnbull, you old sniffle licker.
Wow.
You're a sniffle licker?
How did he know?
old beanbag roller.
Way to go, TJ. Making us better.
Good job.
Thanks, bud.
Mornings with Rena, TJ, and Turnbull.
And you have lots of opportunity to really feel old. So just to put this into perspective, you mentioned that you hired Scruff Connors at Q107. And just in the last month, you hired his son, TJ Connors, to work at a radio station that you programmed in the late 80s.
Yeah, 1985 was my first program director job. And that was a job where, I mean, I just cannot believe. I look back now. That's one of those where I sometimes put my hand on my forehead and say, "Ay, what were you thinking back then?" So again, different times, and it's interesting how I was working with some people back then that I still work with today, which is unbelievable, right? So talk about we're all in this together. But yeah, so TJ is in Winnipeg now, and I remember Scruff would come to Ottawa here, and he phoned me up, and his timing was always, Mr. Kingsbury, Scruff Connors, how are you? What's going on? You want to go for a beer? And so sure enough, we'd meet in the pub, and I remember he would bring Tyler, as a young guy. And it's crazy now that, he's doing, mornings at City, and he's a real talent. Just love that guy. What a bundle of energy. There's a guy that's got the DNA, right? Like, that's a guy that gets hallways. That's a guy that understands teamwork and culture, and we're in show business still. And so quite excited about that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. And listen, it goes back further than 1985. So
I had a chance to hire TJ first time around in Winnipeg, and I'm just excited to have him back on the radio in the market that I happen to be living in. So thank you for that. My mornings will be brighter and better. Thank you very much.
Well, Kevin Britton had a lot to do with that as well, and he's the program director out there. So he's quite excited. I have a lot of really great memories from Winnipeg. It was it was a real learning experience for me. And you talk about high and low there. I mean, it was a really amazing time. We don't have enough time today, I guarantee it, to go through all of the ups and downs in that market. But wow, I know when I left there, Lamont Hollywood was doing mornings on City, and I know 6 months later I was signing some papers for him to support his application to move to the United States to do morning radio. So he turned out okay.
You also fired Andy Frost, which you owned.
Totally. Oh my God. There's so many mistakes that I that I made. I'm not going to be cowardly and say that, you know, I had influence above me to do some of that stuff. That's a cop out.
Yeah.
I don't think I went into that station saying I don't need any help or support or guidance from anybody. I've got my own vision for this, but it was a bit of a, you know, certainly there was some collaboration there, and yes, some things that I would definitely, I think we can say this in life. Well, boy, if I didn't do this, then this would have happened. But with Andy Frost, and this is a true story. I'll have to paraphrase, to be honest, but because I can't do it word for word. But I remember I was at Q and Andy walked in because he'd been at Q107, and he walked in, and I remember just kind of standing up and saying, "Before you say anything, don't say a word. That was then. This is now. I was an idiot, and I can't wait to work with you here." And that's it. So I hope, you know, if you have anything to say to me, say it. But to me, don't give another thought to anything that happened in Winnipeg. That was me. You're an amazing talent. And I hope we work together for a really long time. And I like to think that when we ended up taking on the Leafs at Q, which is another, you know, great story, you know, that I sort of helped Andy get into that position, you know, which eventually led to, you know, him becoming the announcer for the Maple Leafs, which, talk about a dream job. So, so there are a lot of positives on a lot of those scenarios and stories that happen. But yeah, that is true.
By the way, reminded me about the Leafs going on Q107 for 81 hockey games a year. And that was really it, because there was never any playoffs in that era. But yeah, I totally forgot about that. What have you learned from blogging? Because you just took it up about a year ago, and they're great.
Oh, thank you. That's nice of you to say. Well, what I've learned about blogging is I got into it, maybe further to what I was saying. I actually do enjoy learning things and do enjoy trying new things. I'm not a sit at home and watch TV, although there's nothing wrong with sitting at home and watch TV. I actually, you know, do a fair amount of that, but different viewing habits now. But I thought it was something that I wanted to do. And then I realized inside me that I have some things to say, and I wanted to see if I could, you know, get it out on paper. And I've always fancied myself a bit of a writer. I've written a few memos over the years. So I wanted to give it a try. You know, we work with WordPress professionally, not a user-friendly program when we are working with it professionally. But personally, I got into it. And so that was I wanted to learn the technology and see how this all works. You know, to have DannyKingsbury.com is kind of, wow, geez, I have a website. That's kind of interesting. Of course, now I'm just nothing but paranoid about somebody in, you know, halfway around the world is going to hack me and do something nefarious, but that hasn't happened. I changed my passwords. So that was one of the reasons. And then the other one is just you know what? I actually feel like I want to do a bit of a diary, and I knew that you had to be real. It's funny you mention that, because I haven't actually written a blog. I've written several blogs over the last couple of months. I just haven't published them because I'm not feeling them. I don't want to do a quota. You know, I've got some things to say and I've got lots built up, but I wanted to be honest and I wanted to be truthful. I didn't want to be hurtful. I would never, you know, I would never say anything hurtful on there. I don't use bad language because I know it's the internet, and I don't want to be, you know, I know when you click that button, it's out there. So I have some laneway on this thing. I also wanted to think that when my grandchildren are in their 30s and 40s, and I'm long gone, that they'll be able to look back and say, hey, you know, look what Grandpa wrote back in, you know, 2017 about us. You know, like, look at this picture that he put up. And it's not all about grandkids, you know, as you know. It's quite satisfying. You know, it's a quite satisfying feeling. It's just I just have to make sure that I'm in the right headspace to do it. And I could blog 3 times a week, but I think after a while it would be like, oh, okay, thanks for that, Danny. There was nothing else you needed to do that day, then than write this garbage. So I want to make sure that hopefully that it's good. And the truth is that, you know, I'm the judge and jury on it. So if I don't meet my standards on it, then I'm not going to do it. So, but there's more to come, but thank you. That was a really nice compliment to that you paid me. So thank you very much.
One of the things you wrote about is something that I've also been thinking about inside radio stations, and that's about the entire office space or, you know, the reception area. And, you know, radio stations don't have as many people as they used to, but we still have the space. So sometimes you'll see equipment stacked up in corners. And have you given any thought to what the radio station of the future is going to look like?
I think in the traditional buildings, and I've worked in some great buildings. So as long as, you know, and this is, you know, maybe my age is showing here, but because I don't look back and I do take the rear view mirror off on most situations, you know, I let people tell me, you know, why it was bad, what just happened to them. And, you know, and I hear them out and I let them, you know, puke a little bit. And I say, okay, great. That's great. That's all. It's all true. I'm not discounting what you just said, but let's rip the mirror off and let's just move forward. Cause what can we do to change that? So without making that sound completely contradictory, I mean, I worked in great radio stations before where there were more people, but it was the people and the, you know, the physical layout of these stations as well. So, you know, we're at a time when it would be really cool to have smaller real estate, you know, buildings, but that were all, you know, I hate to use the, well, we should be like Google, where we have skateboards and pinball machines and all of that stuff, because there's probably something to that. But it's funny, someone was just in my office. I do have an office here, and it's true. It is a bit lonely here because, for A, it's in a weird part of the building, so there isn't a lot of traffic out front. And B, the door's always open, but I sometimes feel that people think it isn't. So I always have to make sure that I'm as proactive as I can be. But so I think the more that we can see each other, the more that you can yell to somebody, if you were in the next office and I'm working on something and I yell to you that, what was Led Zeppelin's third album again, Matt? And you yell back to me, it was this.
That'd be Led Zeppelin 3, Danny.
The more that you can work that way, I think the better your day is, as opposed to, I don't know the answer. I think I'll send Matt an instant message in Winnipeg and he'll get back to me on that. So that's a reality. And I like that. I like that I can, you know, send an instant message to anyone in 10 different markets and, you know, have communication with them. But I do like, you know, still saying, what did you do on the weekend? Oh, I was moving snow tires and I hurt my back. Oh yeah. What were you doing? And, you know, when you've got that kind of, you know, personal touch, I think that that's great. And control rooms in particular, you know, those were the altar, you know, that was where you know, it was an honor to go in the control room and you know, just crack the door and you looked in and you made sure that the microphone light wasn't on and you looked in and the music was cranking. You know, that's something that I really miss. I have this perception, I have this feeling anyhow, that a lot of the music isn't cranked anymore in control rooms and a lot of feet aren't stomping on the floor. I think that the, you know, a break gets done and then the music goes down. And that's sad to me because I would, you know, I would never turn my on-air feed off. I mean, I only listen to the radio station in the on-air feed because I always wanted to know what was on the air. I never listened to it off a board feed. Somebody, you know, walks in and, hey, do you know that there's a phone call running right now over this song because you're listening to it on board feed and you can't hear it through the... So I miss that part of control rooms where you'd walk in there and you'd see the request lines going, or now you see the you know, people, you know, sending texts in and talking about what's you know, what's going on out there. So that part is a little bit maybe lost these days, particularly with some voice tracking. But you know, the truth is, you could do a fantastic show from where you're sitting right now. So real estate, bricks and mortar, is less important from a product perspective, but I think from a culture perspective, it's probably never been more important. So to me, I just want to make sure that we realize that we do work with people and people are human. People have feelings, people have fears and hopes and excitement and aspirations and families. And, you know, the more that we can stay in touch, I think the better we're going to be. And what's our business in radio? Our business is to be able to engage with the audience, to be able to connect with the audience. Because if we don't do that, music can be copied any station, anytime. But it's the personalities and it's the engagement. It's what we, you know, make our audiences feel that's going to keep us in a good position in this overly saturated world of audio, video, podcast, digital, on demand, you know, which, by the way, I love where we are right now. I can't believe that we're in the middle of this revolution, you know, never before seen, you know, on Earth. Makes the Industrial Revolution look like a, you know, we invented the two sticks. I mean, I just think we're in an amazing time now. The only problem I have with the time we're in now is just the inequity everywhere. It's just the world is, there's just too much that's not balanced. There's too many people who have terrible lives on the same planet, and there's too many people that, you know, have probably more than deserve is not fair. But you know where I'm going with that. I just that part bothers me, and I do wonder why that is. That this is maybe more spiritual than anything else. Like I wonder why you and I are on this podcast right now and not in Syria. Like, why is that? Like, I don't have the answer. I don't know. Like, why weren't we born in Syria and we're struggling to get our families out of this war-torn, the Holocaust, terrible situation? But instead, we're, you know, having a great Skype call in Ottawa and Winnipeg. That just leads me to gratitude. So, which I think is another thing that I really want people to think about. Like, be grateful. Be grateful whenever you can. There's always something that you can and should be grateful for. And don't play that victim card and don't be the, well, if only. I'd be more successful if. Well, no, actually. Well, perhaps you got some bad cards dealt. But be grateful for what you have. Be grateful for your health. Be grateful for where you live. Be grateful for, you know, being on the earth at this time. Like, why not? And by the way, I did Google it. We're only here the one time, so we better take advantage of it, right? So those are the things that I, you know, the long, long, long-winded answer about radio environment. And, you know, I just think it's people business. It's not hard drives. It's not even product anymore. It's just people still.
It's thinking like that, though, that would make you put together a trip to go to the Olympics, to go to Korea and experience it that one time. And so, what did you learn from the Canadian Olympic Committee about organization?
Well, that was a great experience, to say the least, and talk about things that you can't plan for. That came so quickly. And, you know, those that don't know, my son, you know, does a lot of work with Curling Canada, but he kind of got into that through golf here in Ottawa. He's a good golfer. He's always been a golfer, and he's been on the, you know, like the competitive, you know, golfer. He's not professional by any stretch, but competitive golfer. But he's also, he's a PhD candidate for clinical psychology. So he knows a lot about, you know, people, and he's really interested in sports psychology. So, you know, as things always happen in life, is that you get, you know, you meet people who know someone who also knows someone. And if you say and do the right things, and then you can get together with people. So he ended up being the mental performance coach for Rachel Holman. You know, wouldn't you know it, they're one of the top curling teams in Canada. And wouldn't you know it, they qualify for the Olympics. And wouldn't you know it, they're going to Pyeongchang to compete in the Olympics. So it's like, wow. This is pretty exciting, and I'm not going to be sitting on my couch on a Saturday night at 9 p.m. If, you know, that team, you know, wins a gold medal in Korea. I'm just not going to do it. So decided to go to Korea, and it was quick, and I took my other son Brady, and, you know, we just had the time of our lives. And when I was over there, I thought it was the coolest thing, because the Roar of the Rings was a Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening, and then Monday morning at 9 a.m. both teams, men's and women's, were over at the NAC in Ottawa, and the Canadian Olympic Committee just basically took over. Said, you're now a member of Team Canada. Here's the clothing. Here's the drill. Here's your pictures. Here's your passes. Here's how it's going to work. And it was pretty impressive. I don't know how else to put it. And it was pretty impressive being over in Korea at the Olympic Village. If anyone has you know, ever been overseas. I mean, I think we can fake it in Mexico, and I think we can go to Europe, and we can, you know, we can kind of use our digits, and we can, you know, point to things. But when you're in Korea, they don't speak any English as a general rule. 99.9% is non-English. So, and I just love that. I just love being completely vulnerable to not being able to read anything, not being able to understand anything, and having no one understand us. But once you got into the village, you know, it was a completely different story. It was like, it was filled with Canadians who were all like-minded, who were all positive. There was no cattiness there. There was no people looking over the shoulder for somebody more important. I mean, you know, we would go in there and Tessa Virtue would walk by and, hey, that's Tessa Virtue. And she'd say, yeah, that's right. I'm Tessa. How are you guys? Where are you from? Oh, from Ottawa. Why are you here? It was just, it was like a great house party, you know, where you invite all these friends over to you. So then you meet parents and then you meet, you know, relatives and you meet the sponsors. And it was just a fantastic experience. It was so organized. And, you know, what I learned from it is that there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes that you don't really know about. But it's all very impressive. And they are all very committed to athletes doing their best. It isn't a you better win at all costs. The part that people might say, well, geez, that was quite a disappointment. They didn't even medal. Team Holman didn't even medal. Well, it's interesting. On the photograph of that picture, the top left corner was, you know, go there for curling, win a gold medal. They were favorites. They should have won. And then that turned into a footnote because the rest of it was just a fantastic experience. It was just way more than I envisioned it would be. And it was kind of cool being in a 14-hour time change on a 14-hour flight and meeting media that I know, media that I don't know, media that I've admired, athletes that I've seen on TV, and you walk up kind of nervously and hi, and they're like, ah, how are you? It was unbelievable. I mean, I've been to events where there were celebrities where there was a lot more pretension. Let's put it that way.
Danny, this has been fantastic. Thank you so, so much for taking time out of your day to speak with me.
My pleasure, Matt. And I'm right back at you. Easy to say, I know, but I've admired what you've done here with this podcast. You do your prep. I can tell that. And I really love your commitment to it. And I love how you, I think you actually should be back in radio. So I don't have anything for you right now, but I think you should be back in radio. You seem like a great radio guy to me. I can tell by the way you ask questions, and you do have a passion for it. So, but I do want you to be happy no matter what you do. And good luck with this. I'm going to continue to be a fan here on the outside.
Thanks for listening to the Sound Off Podcast. Find us online at soundoffpodcast.com and connect with us wherever great social media is housed. The show is imaged using the sounds from Core Image Studios.
Written and hosted by Matt Kundle.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.